It is equal parts tragedy and mystery. The lawyers for the armorer on Alec Baldwin's movie unload a truly shocking claim. It might have been murder. Plus, Spears versus Spears. And if you think it's Britney against her dad, think again. She is switching it up and coming after her mom with a social media hammer. And then, is COVID making a comeback? Some of the biggest names in entertainment and sports and politics have tested positive this week. And one superstar may not have been truthful to his teammates or the public. It's all next on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. We're going to start tonight with breaking news on the Alec Baldwin movie shooting accident. And we're going to circle back to that word I just said, accident, in a moment, because that is now debatable. TMZ is reporting that the husband of the late cinematographer Helena Hutchins has now hired attorneys and is ready to file a wrongful death lawsuit against, quote, multiple defendants. We do not know yet exactly what multiple defendants means, specifically whom, but you know who the players are. Actor and Rust producer Alec Baldwin fired the deadly shot from a gun that was handed to him by assistant director Dave Halls. And that gun was prepared by armorer Hannah Gutierrez-Reed. We'll, of course, update you when we learn more and when that filing actually happens, if it ever happens. In the meantime, no less than breathtaking comments today from the lawyers for Hannah, the armorer. The sheriff and the local DA have both said the investigation into Hutchins' death is wide open. No one's off the hook. No charges off the table. But now, for the first time, someone connected to all this is publicly suggesting that this might actually be murder. Somebody might have put a real live bullet into a box of so-called dummy rounds with the full intent to sabotage the set.
We know there was a live round in a box of dummy rounds that shouldn't have been there. At least one live round. We have people who had left the set who had walked out because they were disgruntled. We have a time frame between 11 and 1 approximately that day in which the firearms at times were unattended. So there was opportunity to tamper with this scene.
The term that these lawyers use is sabotage, and these are not just any lawyers. They are both former federal prosecutors. I want to play more of their interview, but first I want to show you some of the hefty pushback against accounts that we have been hearing from day one about unhappy crew members protesting long hours and unsafe conditions. And the pushback is coming indirectly from Alec Baldwin himself, the film's star and, yes, one of its producers. Baldwin reposted on Instagram what amounts to a long essay from the film's costume designer, a woman named Therese Davis. Therese writes this: "The story being spun of us being overworked and surrounded by unsafe, chaotic conditions is BS," and she uses the real term. "We never worked more than a 12 and a half hour shoot day. That was once. Most days were under 12. She goes on to say, "We had several safety meetings, sometimes multiple per day. Our assistant director never seemed flippant about safety." There is just so much to chew on here. And joining me now to sort through this are two guests who know this business and the law of this business, like few others. Jim Murray is chief correspondent for Inside Edition and an attorney himself. Dominic Romano is an entertainment lawyer based in New York. So none of this is unfamiliar material. Jim, I'm going to begin with you. First and foremost, let's start with the breaking news. Wrongful death. I don't suppose this is a surprise, although whenever you hear it and hear a name like Alec Baldwin, who may be in the sights, it is very newsworthy.
Sure, and I don't think anybody's surprised. Frankly, I was expecting this from the get-go. What else can this poor gentleman do? He lost his wife. Their son lost their mother. This is his only recourse. Aside from the criminal investigation, This is his civil remedy. And when you talk about multiple potential defendants, you name three, there could be even more. Anybody who was responsible for safety on that set, anybody responsible for hiring, anybody responsible for the handling or distribution of those firearms or ammunition. It could be well beyond those three people. Remember, they're also potentially insured. So you look for the various places where they could get remedies, and their only remedy here is a civil remedy, and it's clearly not going to bring this woman back, but it's their only remedy available at this time.
And Dominic, the way it usually works is if you have two processes that are working parallel, a civil and a criminal, criminal goes first. In most cases, I have seen weird stuff happen, but criminal goes first. And when you're talking about what the allegations that are being thrown around today are, murder, because a felony murder is murder, you could be talking years before you could even get to the litigation of a civil suit.
True. But what I, Ashley, but I think what Jim said is absolutely right. No one is surprised by this. There's multiple parties are going to be sued here, as is the norm when something like this completely unacceptable occurrence happens.
Okay, so I want to get to the other really big, I couldn't believe it when I heard what I heard. I had to, I did some mental gymnastics to process the strategy that I was seeing play out with two lawyers on the Today Show. And the word they used was sabotage. The strategy, so to speak, that they seem to be employing is deflection from their client, Hannah, who's the armorer, to suggest somebody did this. Someone intentionally put a live bullet into a box of blanks, and they did it intentionally to wreak havoc, regardless of the fact that that could, without question, kill someone. Let me put it in their words, and this is how they said it on the Today Show. Take a look at this.
The person who put the live round in the box of dummy rounds had to have the purpose of sabotaging this set. There's no other reason you would do that, mix that live round in with a dummy round.
Well, let me just stop you right there. Is that your theory of the case, that someone intentionally placed a live round into a box of dummies for the purpose of it ending up in a weapon that would be used on set?
We don't have a theory yet. We are investigating, and we were trying to get all the facts. That's one of the possibilities.
We don't have a theory yet. Jim Array, you're a lawyer. Listen, that's a damn theory. And I, for one, I don't appreciate a theory like that from attorneys who should know better until you start to get facts out of your investigation. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think that's really going far.
I was frankly surprised by the allegations, even the suggestion. And Arlesse Trant at Inside Edition, my colleague, spoke to one of these attorneys today who reiterated the same allegation and claim of potential sabotage, but it doesn't let the armorer off the hook based on her own admissions. We know that she's in charge of the firearm. We know, according to her attorney, that she took that firearm out of a safe at 6:30 in the morning and then around 11 a.m. left it on a cart and left it there unattended for at least an hour and a half. And she also left ammunition there. She, according to the attorney, spun the cylinders around and checked to make sure all the cartridges were there, but didn't take out each bullet and inspect to see if it was a live round or a dummy round or a blank. So if not for the armorer, who's responsible for the ammunition? Who's responsible for the firearm? Whether there was live ammunition there or not doesn't necessarily relieve this armorer of any of the potential liability.
And guys, I always say, my dad taught me about guns at a really young age. We had a gun rack. We are that family. And the guns were always loaded, period. Pick up a gun, it's loaded. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you saw. The gun is loaded. And if any of those people had to put that gun to their head and pull the trigger, you bet you know what you're sitting on. They'd have checked with a flashlight to find out if those were blanks or dummies or real bullets. So, Dominic, to that, I want to actually play what they said about and this one kind of blew my mind as well. I'm going to chew on it on the other side with you, Dominic, but this is what they said Hannah did with the gun on the cart, leaving it unattended, and the ammo, leaving it unattended. I mean, I could go on and on, but let's hear from them. Take a listen on the Today Show.
At 11, nothing was going on at that point. She had the guns prepped. She had them laid out on the cart. They then went to lunch. She came back. She had another duty and responsibility as key props assistant, and so she had gone to do that right after she had provided the handgun to Mr. Halls. So Mr. Halls took custody of the weapon, and at that point she was doing her other duties as a key prop assistant.
Okay, Cry Me a River, I have a lot of jobs to do too, and I can't screw up when I get live on the air, and there's nobody who's going to die with my job. But Dominic, to suggest that she would prep guns, leave them on an unattended cart where the entire set can get their smelly fingers on them, and then 2 hours later expect everything's fine and not do a double, triple, and quadruple check on it, all the while in the prop truck back there, the ammo just, it's unattended all the time. That is what they are, you know, proposing in this argument. And all of it, it doesn't suggest murder for Hannah, but it sure as hell suggests like reckless or super duper negligent homicide.
Absolutely. And also desperation on the part of her defense team, on the part of her attorneys. I mean, that's a shocking allegation. And why was the tray unattended? It's only her second film. She gave an interview on a podcast just the month before, weeks before, saying that, you know, her first film, she was surprised that she was given so much responsibility, or words to that effect, that it turned out okay. The facts don't look good for her, but also not a good look for Alec Baldwin to be retweeting that strange, lengthy defense that ends in all caps.
Okay, since you brought it up, I'm going to read some of it because, yeah, I woke up at 5 this morning from my dog. I was going to go back to bed, and I stupidly checked Instagram, and boom, I was in work mode right away with 7 pages of defense from the costume designer named Therese Davis. Let me read a little bit about what she says about this crew. Basically saying, stop your whining about it being unsafe. It wasn't. Those are my words, but here are hers. They tried to renegotiate their contracts halfway through the show and hold the producers over a barrel by walking out. They literally said they deserve more money and nicer hotels than the rest of the crew because they were better than the rest of the crew. These guys are not heroes. They only cared about themselves. And I'm going to continue. There's more. I mean, listen, there's 7 pages. I picked the choicest stuff. These producers who supposedly don't care about their crew have worked tirelessly alongside us. They were some of the most approachable and warm producers I've ever worked with. Concerns were heard and addressed. And Alec Baldwin reposted them all on Instagram with the instruction for us to read this. Listen, there's always two sides to a story, Jim Murray, and sure as heck in a courtroom you get two. But this one is not sitting well with some of the crew members themselves. They're already answering and saying exactly what they felt, and they're giving contemporaneous reports.
Well, and we heard Alec Baldwin over the weekend say in his own words, the sheriff asked that he not comment about any of the facts regarding this case. And by reposting, he's effectively commenting on this. And look, I'm not trying to indict him or suggest that he's liable or over and above what we've already discussed, but I suspect this is really the proper time to let the investigation run its course and not speak publicly about this at all.
Yeah, because when you repost, it's you. You're saying something. You're a player. You're a producer in this. Okay, and when I said that some of the crew members were already, you know, clapping back, I mean it. Lane Looper is a first assistant camera operator, and he was interviewed by George Stephanopoulos on GMA. And he was asked specifically about, you know, what went on there. Let me read you a little bit of his resignation letter that came the night before. So before any of this happened, this is what he was writing. In my 10 years as a camera assistant, I've never worked on a show that cares so little for the safety of its crew. No one died at this point, right? No one's dead. No guns have gone off. They're walking off the job, and this is his resignation letter. And then this is what he said to George Stephanopoulos about everything. Take a listen.
I think with Rust, it was a perfect storm of, you know, the armor, the assistant director, the culture that was on set, the rushing. It was everything. It wasn't just one individual. Everything had to fall into place perfectly for this one in a trillion thing to happen.
So, Dominic, yeah, Alec Baldwin was the first one to say one in a trillion. It isn't. We've seen, you know, people die on you know, in my lifetime by guns on sets that weren't supposed to have, you know, ammo or debris in the barrel. It is not helpful to have this war of words. Or is it? I mean, when I think about it, actually, a sheriff wants everyone to come in, and there's nothing more motivating than anger.
Look, it was a poor choice to retweet. But at the end of the day, in all film, most film sets, you have a rush to be on budget and on time. There's a difference between that than hiring as your, you know, basically your assistant director, someone who's been fired off a previous set in the last couple of years for failure to take proper precautions in gun safety. And then that person, Looper, who resigned because of two accidental, as I understand it, two accidental gun discharges and one accidental explosive discharge. So it's not a great set of facts, and there are going to be multiple people sued. This is not a surprise, and it will be interesting to see what happens here.
Boy, I'll say, I mean, everyone's following every minute of it. Okay, guys, just hold on for one second. I'm going to squeeze in a quick break, but guess what? After the break, Scorsese is going to weigh in. It is not Martin. It's his daughter, Kathy. But before you say, oh, you know, why are you teasing like that? Kathy may be better suited to comment on this than her director father, because Kathy is a Hollywood prop master for decades. And she's got some thoughts about colleagues who, and I quote Kathy, screwed up pretty badly. Welcome back. My guests are Inside Edition's Jim Murray and entertainment lawyer Dominic Romano. Jim Murray, also an attorney. It's why I call him all the time. He always knows the answers. And we're you know, this story just keeps sort of, I don't know, it's an onion, and I keep peeling it, and I see more crazy things that make me cry. And when I saw Scorsese, I, you know, did a double take, and then I was transfixed. Because what I read about, you know, Kathy Scorsese and her life, I didn't know that she had this long life behind the scenes on sets of movies as a prop master. Let me read what she said to Business Insider. Amid the talk of hiring a non-union crew and then pushing them beyond their limits and cutting corners to try to save money, it seems they screwed up pretty badly. She goes on to say, why is it in America that we feel the need to make a movie in 6 weeks when it should take 10 to 12 to save money because some executive in an office has decided this is how much it should cost? That's not the real cost. The real cost is coming at the expense and the well-being of everyone involved in the production. Jim, you're kind of there. You're in Hollywood. You have your finger on the pulse of it. Is this going to be like a wholesale shift in the business model of Hollywood, or is this a blip? Everybody will get over it, and then it's back to business.
Well, I think with the streaming services, and certainly with the pandemic, the huge appetite, people staying at home watching, you know, the streaming services need product. And basically, you have these services who are not necessarily producing these films, but rather buying them. And they're saying, this is what we're willing to pay. And then producers have to scramble to see about making the film within those budget constraints. Look, you know, when you talk about budgets, though, I have, as you have, talked to several prop masters over the past couple of weeks. And regardless of the budget, the one thing they all have in common is they take their jobs very seriously. This is like an oath. People have to remain safe on their watch. And I don't think that safety can be cut, period. I don't care what the budget is.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it reminds me of something else that the lawyers for Hannah Gutierrez-Reed said today, Dominic, and that was, it was so weird. They said, okay, so there were dummy rounds, a big box of dummy rounds, and someone put a real one in there. And then they actually said a dummy round has, and I'm quoting them, a dummy round has the same projectile tip. It looks like a real round. Yes, however, a dummy round has a little nub shoved in on the end of the cartridge so that you can tell it's not real. And anyone who just looks at it, even loaded, can see the foot of that cartridge. So once again, Dominic, I just feel like they're burying their client by trying to do good.
Look, at the end of the day, this is most probably negligence and likely gross negligence. I think Brandon Lee's sister said it best when she tweeted out, no one should ever die by a gun on a film set, period. And I think Alec Baldwin's math is off when he says one in a trillion. This happened in the early 90s, the Brandon Lee death, and it's happened again. Why? Why weren't those chambers checked? Why weren't procedures in place? Why was a live weapon left unattended for almost 2 hours over lunchtime between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m.?
And then even after that, Why didn't they take a flashlight and shine it down the barrel and shine it in every one of the spots where anything would be and inspect whether the little nugget was punched in to ensure it's a dummy or bulbous to show that it's a real bullet? That's, I know that. I'm not an armorer and I know that.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, one last comment. If you're not sure.
So this one, Jim Ray, is important because it kind of got a little swallowed up today, but I seized on it right away with forensics because forensic files, I love it. The lawyers for Hannah said, you know, we're going to be waiting on the FBI's work here, the fingerprinting and the DNA analysis of the cartridge and of the projectiles. Whoosh, now you're talking my language, because whoever, if they say intentionally put their little fingers on a real bullet and stuffed it into a chamber and then that bullet got shot, and they can match that projectile to that cartridge, could it really be possible we might actually have, I hate to say the smoking gun, but the molecular smoking gun in the DNA or a fingerprint, Jim?
I don't care if somebody brought a live round on the set. It doesn't necessarily absolve anybody of responsibility when you're talking about an armorer who's supposed to check the weapon and supposed to check the ammunition and maintain possession and control of both. So let's say somebody brought ammunition on the set and there were reports that people were using this gun or others for target practice. So it's not like nobody's ever heard of a live round on this set. This is disputed by Hannah Gutierrez-Reed's lawyers, but we have heard reports. But it doesn't mean Hannah Gutierrez-Reed isn't supposed to check that gun. So it doesn't matter. It's like a red herring to me. Yes, we know there was a live round because the live round shot and killed a woman. But that does not mean that Hannah Gutierrez-Reed did not have that responsibility.
Blame to go around in varying degrees. I see a whole hodgepodge of different kinds of charges, and there could be one. There could be one that is, you know, could be murder, felony murder. Without question, if that's true, what these lawyers are suggesting, I mean, that's the top end, and that's ugly. Thank you, Dominic Romano. Good to see you again. Thank you so much. Jim Murray, I'm going to ask you to stick around. I have another entertainment story I want you to jump in on. It's that whole story you keep hearing. He's the villain of the Free Britney movement. I'm talking about Jamie Spears, right? He's been taking it on the chin for 13 years. Now Britney is busting loose on social media and throwing deep, dark shade at her mom. At 23 years old in 2005, Britney Spears was on top of the world. But few people knew that world was actually toxic. Drug use, a decade-long struggle with mental health, and a roiling family legal battle over who would control her well-being showed that there was nothing glamorous behind the scenes. Much of her anger for the 13-year-long conservatorship fell squarely on her father, Jamie. Her scathing condemnation of Jamie gave us all a glance at just how ruptured their relationship was. But it turns out Britney was just getting started. And she had a whole lot more in the tank for her mother, Lynn Spears. She posted a diatribe on her Instagram yesterday before perhaps thinking twice or thinking better of it and deleting it. But as is standard for stars, there is no delete button. Here we go. Thank you for exiting out of my life and finally allowing me to live mine. P-S-S-S-S. Do I know how mean I sound? Yes, I 100 billion percent I do. What people don't know is that my mom is the one who gave him the idea. I will never get those years back. She secretly ruined my life. So take your whole I have no idea what's going on attitude and go F yourself. In the Instagram, that was followed by three icons giving her the bird and then four exclamation points. You know exactly what you did. My dad is not smart enough to ever think of a conservatorship. But tonight I will smile knowing I have a new life ahead of me. Well, there you have it. That's the new Freed Britney, folks. And joining us now, former publicist for Jessica Simpson, Rob Shooter, who is the author of The Four-Word Answer. Also with us is legal expert and former prosecutor Susan Filan, and chief correspondent for Inside Edition, Jim Murray, who's also an attorney, has stayed with me. Okay, Rob, as a publicist, I'd love you to weigh in on what the hell is going on with Britney Spears, because on Instagram, I see a troubled girl who seems to be spiraling downward.
Yeah, I think your instincts are absolutely right there. These shocked people today when we woke up, when we saw these Instagram posts. They were quickly deleted, so I don't know if she actually thought better of it or if somebody got to Britney and said, maybe now is not the moment. Clearly, Britney has a story to tell, and that story will ultimately come out. Putting my PR hat on, though, I'd say now's not the moment to do it. She's still dealing with this conservatorship. Get that out of the way, and then will be the moment for you to tell everything. But I don't think she should keep this a secret forever. I think the truth needs to come out.
Yeah, so, you know, Jim Murray, this is really up your alley. You're a lawyer and you work in the entertainment business. Why do you think she would delete it? I think Rob was alluding to it, but why the instant delete?
Well, I think Rob really hit it on the head. This should come out, and it will come out, but this is probably not the best time. She's still on the eve of a couple of hearings. She's trying to get rid of this conservatorship. She's trying to do so without a mental evaluation. If she appears that she's not stable, she's not going to get that. She's not going to get that conservatorship review eliminated without a mental evaluation. She doesn't want that. And look, I don't know anybody who's really surprised that she may have some animus toward her mother. A couple of weeks ago, I talked to her, Jason Alexander, who very, very briefly, for just a little over a day, was married to Britney Spears, and it was annulled, he says, at the insistence of her mother, who he said was really the controlling person in that relationship, or at least he alluded to that. And so I can't say that I'm really surprised, but it is disappointing that this is happening now for her.
So, Susan Filan, you know, let's just look at this strictly from law and justice, okay? Jim and Rob said she's still in the process. It ain't over till it's over. I don't know if you follow her Instagram account, but even those who are obsequious about her are saying, WTF, what is going on? You're acting odd. There is a chance that this could all reverse, and Britney could find herself back in a situation she doesn't want to be in, and that is under a guardianship.
I don't see that at all, Ashley. First of all, her father is now saying he doesn't want any part of being in a conservator or her being under guardianship. And secondly, it's really hard to get someone conserved. I've always been surprised, A, that she got conserved, and B, by the length of the conservatorship. It's a very high burden. It's a very high standard. So I actually don't see that as a danger to her. I can't comment on her mental state or whether, in terms of PR, that was a good move or a bad move. But I found it curious all along how long this conservatorship lasted. And I think, especially since her father is saying, I'm done, I don't think there's much chance of this being continued at the hearings in 2 weeks.
I look at it, this tattoo, and I'm thinking, who are these fans who, you know, got a whole Britney Spears on your arm? Are you going to be good with that? And like, you know, when you're 90. So, Rob, do you think anything has to do with the move that her mom actually made earlier this week? She filed for, I think, over $600,000 in reimbursement for legal fees. Do you think this was sort of just a, I don't know, some kind of a lanced boil coming because Britney was mad about the request for money?
That metaphor is probably a very good one, because certainly this is not just about her mommy asking to have her legal bills covered. It's why she spent all that money on the legal bills that has drove Britney insane. And Britney is really, really angry, rightfully so. I have insiders that tell me for the first time in 13 years, Britney feels like she's got her voice back. And I think when you feel like that, you want to use it. And Britney has certainly been doing that. Maybe not the best idea at the moment, but she hasn't had a voice in a very long time. We don't even know if she's had access to her social media accounts. When her dad was in charge, he might have been in control of those messages. Now Britney is speaking out, maybe the wrong moment, but also to her mommy, asking for all that money right now, just shows you how tone deaf her mom is at the moment. This is not the moment for anybody to be doing anything like that. And I think Britney is rightfully so very, very angry.
Well, after the break, we're gonna, I'm going to let you know what her mom actually said to her that really set her off. And all of you moms out there in TV land, I'm going to just tell you right now, go pour a bourbon and then sit down and clear all the projectiles within reach, because you are going to be KO'd. We're back after this. Now with Rob Shooter, attorney Susan Filan, and Inside Edition's Jim Murray. All right, Susan Filan, this is for you. The thing that Britney Spears went ballistic about had to do with a question that her mom had for her. This is how she topped off her Instagram. Let me just read it for you. And again, moms out there, take a deep breath, because. Quote, "My mom gets so concerned," in capital letters, "and says, 'You're acting weird. What's wrong with you?' And I say, 'Hi, my name is Britney Spears. Nice to finally meet you.' And then all that ugly stuff that I read earlier followed." So I guess Mrs. Spears' real infraction here, Susan, was that she was thinking that Britney was acting weird. Again, if you look at Britney's Instagram, it is beyond weird. It's nuts. I can't tell you. You got to go yourself and take a look at it. But Susan, I just worry that this whole Free Britney thing, people didn't know who they were talking about. They just got sucked up in a movement and thought it was fun.
I don't think anybody has any idea whatsoever what's going on in this case, in this family, inside Britney's head, inside her parents' head, inside their relationships. Again, I'm going to make the same point that I made last time. A conservatorship is really hard to get, and it's hard to keep for that amount of time, especially in California. You have to have a lot of medical evidence and mental health evidence, and there has to be proof that she can't handle her affairs, her finances, her life, so that for her father to have the kind of control over her money and who she marries and whether she can tweet and whether she can post on Instagram. Either there was a gross miscarriage of justice and there was something wrong with the presentation of the case or the adjudication of the evidence, or there was really something wrong with Britney, and she's either gotten better and it's time to release her father or release the conservatorship, or it's just been going on too long. I don't know exactly what's going on, but what I think I'm getting from what I read is that the time has come for the conservatorship to end. Her father doesn't want it anymore. And no matter what she posts or what she tweets or who she marries or what she says, that's not going to be the legal litmus test of whether the conservatorship stays in place. And for her mom now to file this claim of $650,000 that she wants to be paid for her role and whatever that was, I don't think she has a chance in Hades of getting a dime out of this.
Interesting. I'm just curious about, you know, whether, in fact, it is time to end the conservatorship. Everybody who thinks they know, these are dispassionate parties that have been on this case for the 13 years. These are dispassionate judges. They don't have an axe to grind or a dog in the fight, and yet they have sought fit to see, hey, shouldn't end. Okay, one last comment. And Rob Shooter, I have to get you on this because Britney grew up in the age of Jessica Simpson. They were starlets together. They were media spotlight. Their lives were just, you know, instantly at age 17, larger than life. And that is an immense amount of stress. It took Britney one way and it took Jessica another. She became a, you know, a titan of industry. She became a musician and an actress. And she had her struggles. And she showed us this week what she looked like 4 years ago. I'll show the picture now. 4 years ago, she said, when I realized I'd hit rock bottom and I've been sober ever since. You know her. You're her publicist. This must have hit you so hard to see this picture of her.
it's a Jessica that I knew, and I was working with Jessica. She had lost herself, and so I was with Jessica just after she had broken up with Nick Lachey. I wrote their breakup statement. I spent a ton of time with Jessica, and the Jessica that I knew before the breakup was not the same Jessica. She just lost her way. And so now it's really great to see Jess back. I think she said that she lost her light, and now she is sparkling and shining. And so I think the Jess we all fell in love with is the person that's back. But it just goes to show you, even with all that money and all that fame, you can also get lost in life, and you got to know who you are. And I'm happy that Jess is doing so great. She's a good person. Yeah, but the stress on these people cannot be overestimated. The stress on these celebrities, particularly at a young age, it's really hard to see behind the scenes. I'm happy Jess is back.
Thank you for saying that. These are kids, and you have no idea what it's like on the other side of that lens. They are not sport. They are not just consumption product. They are young people, and this is brutal stuff. So thank you for saying that. Rob, Susan, Jim, thank you to all three of you. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, still to come. Halloween, check, and pumpkin spice latte, check. Preparing for family Thanksgiving. Whoa. Wait, are we back to normal yet? Do we have to share our vaccine status with Uncle Rex? How COVID may actually be scheming to derail your family get-together again. That's next. Just when you thought we were turning a corner with COVID, it rears its ugly head again. I don't know if you heard, but this week, some of the biggest names in entertainment and sports and politics tested positive. Singer Ed Sheeran, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, Khloe Kardashian and her little one, True, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, NHL star Sidney Crosby, that one got me, rocker Jon Bon Jovi, Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and actor Jason Momoa. And that is just to name a few. If these people living in their celebrity bubbles aren't safe, what does that say for the rest of us? Or does it just prove that coronavirus is here to stay, regardless of what we do? And if that's the case, how much death can we stomach? I am joined by Dr. Ian Smith. You know him best from the show The Doctors, but he also served on the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition. He's also, you know, in his spare time, the author of eight, count them, New York Times best-selling books. I thought that was a typo. It's not. He's just that good. His latest book is a detective novel called Wolf Point that's already being turned into a TV show because, you know, Ian is just not successful enough. Dr. Ian, good to have you. Thank you for coming on. You know, this Aaron Rodgers thing blowing up in the news and all these celebrities kind of made me think, where are we? I kind of need to talk to Dr. Ian about where we stand, you know, culturally, socially, medically. I want you to just kind of give me the state of the union on it.
Sure. Well, first of all, let's look at these cases. Some of those who you mentioned, the celebrities, some were vaccinated, some were not vaccinated. It is believed that Aaron Rodgers was not vaccinated, according to the reporting. And so they're two very different stories. Those who are vaccinated, like Mayor Garcetti from L.A. and others, Jen Psaki, people have to understand there is a concept called breakthrough infections. And that happens. That is, even if you are vaccinated, you are not 100% protected from getting COVID. However, you are protected from dying from COVID, and it's more likely that you will have a very mild course if you get infected. Those who are unvaccinated, like Aaron Rodgers supposedly, they stand to risk getting a very severe course of the disease and potentially dying from it. But unfortunately, Ashley, a lot of people are making the argument, well, why should I get vaccinated if I'm gonna get infected anyway? Well, that's like making the argument that why should I wear my seatbelt when a car is traveling at 90 miles per hour if the airbag may hurt me? Well, the airbag may be deployed in a crash and it may hurt you, but going through the windshield is going to kill you. And so people, when they make that argument about the breakthrough infections as a reason why they shouldn't get vaccinated, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Where are we? COVID is still going to be here for a while. It will only go away if people wear masks, if people get vaccinated, and people are socially distanced. This is just science. It's not politics. It's not religion. It's science. And so can we get out of this? Yes, we can get out of it, but not unless people are going to work together to do it.
So work together. Glad you said that, because I want to play what Aaron Rodgers said on August 26th. He's making really big headlines because he kind of, you know, said he just kind of got around the whole question, are you vaccinated? Here's what he said. Take a look.
Are you vaccinated, and what's your stance on vaccinations?
Yeah, I've been immunized. You know, there's a lot of conversation around it, around the league, and a lot of guys who have made statements and have made statements, owners who made statements. You know, there's guys on the team that haven't been vaccinated. I think it's a personal decision. I'm not going to judge those guys. There's guys that have been vaccinated that contracted COVID. It's an interesting issue.
It's an interesting issue. I don't think it's an interesting issue. I think it's a critical one. And the reason I say that is because immunized / vaccinated. I don't know what the NFL's responsibility is here, but, you know, these guys share gyms together and they share locker rooms together and they fly on private jets to their games together. They're in viewing rooms together. They do a lot of indoor activity together and they huff and they puff and they blow the house down. So, is there some liability here if he sort of fudged it and people were exposed and maybe somebody got sick?
Well, he was definitely fudging it. There's no doubt about it. And I feel bad that the reporters in the room didn't do proper follow-up and say, are you vaccinated, yes or no? Now, we still may have tap danced around that issue, but even him tap dancing around the issue says something to you. It says that people who are in positions of power, who are very visible, who are deciding not to get vaccinated, for whatever reason, don't want to come forward and say that they're unvaccinated. So it's kind of like choose one or the other. If you're not going to get vaccinated, say, I don't want to get vaccinated for these reasons. But, you know, with the NFL does not have a vaccine mandate in that sense, but they do have a testing protocol if you are unvaccinated. With Aaron Rodgers, he is in now the COVID-19 protocol, which leads one to believe that he was either infected or that he had an exposure, a significant exposure to someone who was infected. Everyone is saying by reporting that he was infected.
I got 10 seconds left. Should I ask my Uncle Rex to show me his vax certificate to sit at my Thanksgiving table? And I got down to 5 seconds now.
No, just if you love someone and you know someone, if they say they're vaccinated, believe them. Strangers, absolutely.
Dr. Ian, great to have you. Please come back. I love you to pieces.
Love you too. Take care.
Always good to have you. Hey, everyone, thanks for joining us. Make sure you tweet me at TV Ashley and hit me up on Insta at Ashley Banfield, same on Facebook, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow. Bye, everybody.